Well, next hour, we're going to talk about intuition and the psychic realm. But when we come back with Daniel Estulin, of course, we're going to take your phone calls as we talk about the Bilderbergs. His latest movie, Bilderberg the Movie, debuts in New Orleans on May 24th. Okay, welcome back. Daniel Estulin with us. We'll get to your calls as well this hour. Daniel, let's talk a little bit about just the direction of everything that seems to be going crazy these days. Everything seems topsy-turvy. What's the latest you hear about Syria?
Oh, that's a very interesting question. Depending from what angle you want to look at it from.
I would say, well, you know, we know Russia's supporting Assad. What is confusing to me is that we support the rebels who are ISIS in other countries. I don't get it.
My position hasn't really changed since, you know, my book came out. It hasn't been out in the United States yet, but it's been out in Europe. It's called In the Name of Allah in Some Countries and Other Countries is Out of Control, and the subtitle, How the West Created, Funded, and Unleashed the Islamic Terror on the World. And, you know, in that sense, my position hasn't changed in the sense that the next world war would not be a nuclear war, but primarily an economic war. And you know, meaning, you know, I believe, and I still believe, it is far more useful for establishment elite circles to use the East as a foil to bring down certain parts of the West with economic weapons, such as, for example, the dumping of the U.S. dollar. And so the chaos this would cause in global markets and the panic that would ensue among the general public would provide perfect cover for the introduction of what the globalists call the Great Financial Reset. Okay, and the idea of the, you know, the term reset is essentially a code word for the total centralization of all fiscal and monetary management of the world's economic system or economies under one institution, you know, be it the International Monetary Fund or whatever you want to call it. But, you know, the whole idea is, again, you do that, you do the reset, you create a new economic model, if you can actually think of, you know, what that model would be, you get rid of cash, and you go digital. And, of course, this would culminate in the destruction of the dollar's world reserve status, its replacement being the International Monetary Fund's special drawing rights basket, you know, currency system. And, you know, this special drawing rights basket system would eventually act as a stepping stone towards a single global currency system, and its final form and function would probably be entirely digital. And this would give the globalists total push-button control over even the smallest aspects of normal trade and business. And the amount of power they would gain from a single centralized digital currency, you know, would be limitless. And Syria in itself is just one layer, George, upon many in the process of a deliberate global instability. And it seems to be vitally important, you know, to the elites, given that they continually make these, you know, new and newer attempts to draw the American public into support for the so-called, you know, the regime changes. You know, we've heard the New York Times, or Washington Post, or any one of these publications overtly, you know, the press narrative that Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has a long history of war crimes, including the use of, you know, chemical weapons against civilians, yet neither the New York Times nor anyone else in government or the establishment media has produced a single shred of compelling concrete evidence that Assad is guilty of such acts, including the latest chemical attack, which, you know, which Donald Trump and his, you know, goons used as a rationale for cruise missile strike against Syrian military targets, you know, and this rhetoric calling for the outing of Assad. So again, no matter how you look at the scenario, and, you know, Syria is one of many such elements. Of course, they're going to use Syria to try to get, you know, to get Trump out. And, you know, George Soros, he predicted that Trump will fail because he is unpredictable and unprepared, quote unquote, and that he will end up bad for the markets, you know, will become, you know, may become this self-fulfilling prophecy. So where is this all heading? I'm afraid nowhere good. First, if you consider the fact that every time it appears that the Syrian government seems to be making headway in destroying the terrorists, there's suddenly another chemical attack which places Assad under suspicion. Okay? So, you know, I see it is useful as a perpetual boogeyman, and sadly the Muslim religion has one foot stuck in the Dark Ages and will remain fertile ground for generating, you know, these extremist groups for decades to come. And the elite circles have every intention of protecting certain factions of ISIS in Syria, which means that ISIS will continue to spread from the area into the European Union and then also the United States or Canada, and then through Canada, you know, into the United States. And terrorist attacks will continue to multiply, which, needless to say, serves the interests of the globalist elite. You know, secondly, sure, we've also learned that Trump's administration is perfectly willing to, you know, fast-track certain long-standing establishment projects that involve kinetic action, such as, you know, destruction and death. We could be talking about North Korea. We could be talking about Syria. And I'm certainly, you know, God forbid, you know, hopefully we're not talking about Russia. And third, I think many people also forget that Syria continues to maintain a mutual defense pact with Iran. And why does this matter? Because Syria is not Libya and Syria is not Afghanistan. Assad is not going to go down like Gaddafi at the hands of the insurgent people like ISIS. So the regime change in Syria, a country well established, you know, with a regime which is actually, you know, receives great support from the general population, for as much as, you know, mainstream media will tell you otherwise. So, you know, in Syria, it's going to require a lot of American boots on the ground. And this, in turn, will invite hundreds of thousands of, you know, troops from the Iranian elite guard to intercede. And if you study military preparedness around the world, you know that a country like Iran or North Korea will offer far greater resistance than what we saw in Afghanistan or Iraq. And again, also you have these other elements such as Russia and China will also enter the fray. And then, you know, you're looking, you know, staring, you know, straight at World War II and the annihilation of the human race, except for the crazies in Washington think they can win this war.
Okay, Daniel, let's go to the calls as promised. Plus, we've got more phone calls and questions for you. We go to Joe in the Bronx to get things started. Hello, Joseph. Welcome to the
George,
show.
How are you?
All right.
Good. Yeah, I wanted to ask Daniel, what role do you think the Rothschilds can play? I mean, do you think they could be instrumental in stabilizing both Western Europe and the United States economy since they're worth over $400 trillion?
Yeah, you know, I don't think, you know, their wealth has really all that much to do with it, because it's not only the wealth, it's also the bloodlines, you know, the peerage and the lineages, which is why, again, the Rothschilds may have a seat at this proverbial table for the elite, whereas the Rockefellers do not, and neither do the, for example, the Romanovs, the, you know, the remnants of the Russian royal family that ruled Russia for 300 years. You know, the Rothschilds at this time, you know, their isolationist project, they're the people behind Donald Trump's presidency. So their idea, it's not that, again, it's important to understand that when I talk about these things, and I had a couple of friends just text me over the last half an hour or so, ask me, hey, so you're saying that the Trump, you know, and the Rothschilds now, you know, they're part of, you know, us? There's no us as far as the elite circles are concerned. It's just at this point, you know, this crazy point in history, the interests of the Trumps and the Rothschilds and the these other powerful individuals and groups behind that, you know, presidential initiative, their interests just tend to coincide a little bit with the interests of 99% of the world's population. So to answer your question, yes, they're doing what needs to be done as far as our interests are concerned, but it's very short-lived and short-term, because their interests can never coincide with the interests of the general population. They want to kill us the same way everybody else does. You know, the elite, you know, this new global class of owners and managers who oppose the people divided by states' borders, et cetera, et cetera. It's just at this time, you know, they, our interests and our interests, they do coincide, because the economic model represented by the opposition, the Clinton crowd, is dead. And so they need to work very hard to make sure they create a new model in a very short period of time, put it to work, make it work, you know, put it out there, and make sure that they can save the world from collapse and annihilation.
Daniel, where does China fit into all of this?
Well, that's a very good question, because, again, if you kind of look at, you know, the Chinese and the Russians and the Americans, everybody's saying it's some kind of a triumvirate, all three of them working together, the Russians and the Chinese. Russia, unfortunately, you know, economically is not strong enough, you know, to be at the same table with the Americans and Chinese. So if you're kind of thinking of a proverbial chessboard, you know, think of it as the Russians are the chessboard itself. And, you know, the white and black pieces are, you know, of the game itself is being played by the Americans and the Chinese. And unfortunately, this is exactly how things stand right now. There is some talk of Chinese working together with the Russians, but again, it's just talk because I think the Chinese have a lot more to gain by working with the Americans. Because again, you know, with the elections of Donald Trump, China stands as one of the key conflict areas of world politics. I think we all agree. And so we should say that, you know, China is not an independent or a free country. Yes, it's a big country. It's a powerful country. It's the second, you know, biggest economy in the world. But China is a double-edged sword of the elite, directed both against the interests of the transnational slash transatlantic elite circles, and also against, you know, the interests of Russia. Keep in mind that behind China Project, excuse me, is a part of the establishment, meaning the Rothschilds, and also a part of the Anglo-American transnational elite circles of the United States, such as J.P. Morgan. So the China Project, as well as the, you know, Belt Initiative and Silk Road Initiative, which is actually taking place as we speak right now in China, you know, these projects are counterattack projects against the transatlantic projects, TTIP and TTP, created by the Rockefeller crowd. And so once again, behind the scenes, two of the world's more powerful families are fighting out, you know, the world hegemony, the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds. And, you know, and again, why do I say that the Chinese is not independent? Because if you kind of go back, you know, to the British Empire's role in controlling China since the First Opium War in 1860-61, and also through some of the more, you know, most powerful families in the world, which again are far more powerful than the Rothschilds. And, you know, the gentleman, you know, talked about, or somebody's talked about $400 trillion. We don't know if it's $400 trillion. We have no idea if it's $400 trillion or $400 quadrillion, but it's needless to say it's a lot of money. And
it sure
above
is.
The Rockefellers and the Rothschilds, you have people who are much more powerful than these individuals, the Keswicks, the Flemings, the Lodges, Mathesons, Benns, spelled B-E-N-N, Darcys, Percys, Montgomery, Mandeville families of nobility and aristocracy. So all of them on a social, political, and economic scale, they're far above the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers. And we could safely say that the Rothschilds, you know, they're the representatives of these families, just as the presidents and prime ministers, you know, are the representatives of the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds. And just one more thing I wanted to say before, you know, before we move on to another subject. About 2.5 years ago, it might have been three, there was a very interesting study conducted by this American researcher and I think his counterpart in Australia and New Zealand. These two, you know, gentlemen went back to 1180, you know, in England, to the period of Richard the Lionheart. We're talking 837 years ago. And they kind of traced back using the lineages, the peerages, you know, the heraldry, et cetera, you know, financial ownership of businesses. And what they discovered is amazing. 1%, that's 162,000 people, George, own almost 70% of everything, you know, in the United Kingdom in the last 837 years. And all of these people are related and married to each other. And in Western Germany, 70% of industry is in the hands of the old Saxon aristocracy, okay? So as it turned out, it was, you know, impossible for Trump to lose the elections. There was simply too much power behind Trump's bid. And, you know, when people say that Trump, you know, he's a billionaire, he used his money, Trump, it wasn't a question of using his money. You know, Hillary Clinton had the Rockefellers, George Soros, Hollywood, Wall Street, you know, Washington behind her. And these powers pale in comparison to some of the oldest aristocracies in Europe, you know, whose
sure.
wealth goes back a
well,
thousand
plus
years.
Trump had the average person, the middle class, who were just fed up with the current situation.
You know, George, the thing is, there is no more middle class. You know, middle class was eliminated in Latin America in the 1980s. 92% of it was completely wiped out. The other 8% joined the upper, you know, lower upper elite circles. Then in Eastern Europe, you know, the Soviet Union, the satellites, the middle class was wiped out in the 1990s. Because, you know, a few people know these numbers, but in 1989, just before the collapse of the Soviet Union, there were only 14 million people living in the Soviet diaspora who were living below the poverty line. 7 years later, in 1996, these 14 million became 168 million people, plus 50 million which were killed or died off as a result of change from socialist to capitalist system. So Western Europe and the United States lived off as a result of destroying the middle class in the 1990s. And now, George, we're seeing the same thing in Western Europe and the United States, where the elite circles, you know, are surviving very barely as a result of destroying middle class in Western Europe and the United States. And when that's done, there's nowhere else to eat. So going back to what I said initially, the problem for the people behind the central banking warfare model, which is the Clinton liberal, you know, Rockefeller banking financier crowd, is their system is dead. They have nowhere to go. The expansion is dead because there's no limitless growth on a, you know, on a finite planet. Karl Marx talked about this. So they need a new model, and that's why Trump came in. And behind Trump, you had all these extremely powerful people whose wealth goes back 1,000 years and whose names do not appear in Google search engine. That's why they're powerful. And that's why he won. And he had no choice but to win. And in fact, Russian intelligence back in 2012 knew that either Trump was going to win or Rand Paul was going to win. They simply made a very simple calculation. One model is dead, so all these people in the liberal crowd are gone. So who can come up with an alternative model? Yeah, these two individuals. You know, some lean, you know, towards Rand Paul and some lean towards Trump, but they were dead on. And now what we're seeing is the consequences of that. There's no more middle class anywhere in the world.
Let's go to Noel in Riverside, California. Noel, hello there.
Hi, George. I was hoping you'd say that. I'd like to remind everybody that because of the cross-checking here in the United States in the elections and ballots, hundreds of thousands of people got just dropped off the voting registers. When they went to vote, they couldn't, or they were told in advance they couldn't vote because they had the same name as somebody else.
Who already
and
voted.
That,
wow.
Yeah, that helped somebody win the election. So I'm just saying that people have to take that into consideration. We're talking about 100,000 and more got just knocked off because they had the same name, and most of those names were like Rodriguez, you know, Joe Brown, things like that. But anyway,
look at the big picture. It doesn't matter. I'm sorry to interrupt you. It doesn't matter how many people get dropped off. For example, you know, the Pope, it doesn't get elected in the conclave. Popes in the Vatican get elected in, you know, very expensive restaurants. The presidents of the United States do not get elected, you know, via general elections. You know, it's a myth. You can vote for anybody you want until the cows come home. The decisions are made long before the presidential elections take place. Just as, for example, the Iraqi war in 2003 wasn't decided in New York in the General Assembly of the United Nations. It was decided on a ship just off of the coast of France in Antibes. And the people who are listening to the show and who know how power structures work, they're giggling to themselves right now because they know that I know what all this stuff is about. So it doesn't matter how many people get dropped off or left off. Even if everybody votes, the elections are decided or predetermined, and the voting machines also rigged, you know, to make sure that, you know, enough people vote for one candidate who needs to win the elections. And if that doesn't happen, then the Supreme Court comes in and just steals the election for you, as we saw, you know, in 2000 with George W. Bush and Al Gore. So again, it doesn't matter how many people get dropped off. And I know you're right. The system is, you know, it's corrupt. We're living in a very corrupt world. But unfortunately, the people who rule the world, they understand they have an agenda, and unlike us, who really don't really know what we want, they know exactly what we want because they're looking at their self-preservation because they've been running the world for thousands of years. And in order to maintain this power, okay, they have to be way ahead of the game.
And Noel, hold on. We're going to come back and get you with your question and the rest of the calls next on Coast to Coast AM with our special guest, Daniel Estulin, author of The True Story of the Bilderberg Group and his film, Bilderberg, the Movie. Well, next hour, we're going to talk about psychic intuition. When we come back, we're going to wrap things up with Daniel Estulin about the Bilderbergs and take your phone calls as well. And as promised, we go back to Noel in Riverside, California for her question. Noel, before we get going, I've got a bet with Tom about how you spell your name.
Oh, it's like in Christmas, N-O-E-L.
Now, that's different, though, because most women have their names N-O-E-L-L-E, right?
Yeah.
But yours isn't, and I just lost $20. Thanks.
Sorry.
All right, go ahead.
Okay. That's why I don't bet on things unless I'm 110%.
You do know it's the last time you'll ever get in on the show again. aren't you? I'm not kidding, kidding.
I'll have to change my name then. Okay, well, years ago I heard Mr. Estulin talk about these people wanting to create a 10-nation bloc around the world with, you know, the Amero here and all that. And I was wondering, with no nation sovereignty, and it, I guess it boiling down to a one-world government type of thing, I was wondering if he is still hearing that's going to happen, because it kind of sounds like, you know, what the Bible says about a one ruler over everything.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, you know, if these so-called elites could hear this video, 23 Minutes in Hell, Hell is a Real Place, I think some of them might change your ways, because if they don't change your ways, we know what Jesus thought about the greedy. So I wish they would watch that. And thank you, George, very much.
Okay,
for your show.
Thank you, Noel.
It's a blessing.
Appreciate it. Change your name.
I think the Amero is long dead. It was actually stillborn quite a few years back. What you do have is dismantling of, as far as, again, what I said earlier in the show, yeah, the current model is dead. The nation, the idea of nation states is dead. So you have a new model. The ideas that they're looking at, city states, for example, George, replacing nation states, creation of digital and regional currencies. You have war on cash. The objective is to eliminate all cash from circulation. It has nothing to do with fighting terrorism. Rather, it's, you know, it's through control of population, eliminate, you know, anonymity that cash provides, and replace it with something you can track all the time. Number three, that'll be dismantling the economic model on the planet Earth and building the intergalactic civilization, which is, again, space age. I've talked about this in my award-winning book, Trans-Evolution, The Coming Age of Human Deconstruction. We're talking about moon colonization, Mars, and so on and so forth. Also to assure the access to necessary natural resources, such as, for example, helium-3, which is the isotope which we're going to use as the next stage, you know, of source of energy. Dismantling of Westphalia, which is, again, dismantling of nation-states or countries. Shift from the capitalist model to the model of repressive dictatorship. Okay, and this is, of course, being discussed as we speak via the creation of city-states. In other words, you know, a friendly democracy, you know, with the mask is gone. They're taking the mask off, and you have, you know, hardcore dictatorship. And that's what we're seeing in the United States, in Western Europe, and everywhere else. Deindustrialization of the world, because, again, progress and development of society is directly proportional to population density in a few of the elite circles. And you're living on a finite planet with, you know, limited natural resources, which is planet Earth, and an ever-expanding population base. You don't need industries. You don't need, you know, the progress and development of society, which is, again, another reason why Trump is an enemy, because one of the first things Trump said is, you know, the whole idea of infrastructure. And the second thing Trump said, and I think it's one of the most important speeches ever given by the President of the United States, and we talked about, you know, the future of space-based industries and colonization of space and our role in the universe. And then, of course, another point, and this is also key and important, it's the elimination of alternative centers of power. And one such center is the Vatican. The objective, obviously, is to weaken it. And we saw how that was being done. If you kind of go back to 2012, I don't know if you remember Vati leaks, the leak of leaks of a series of secret documents, of Pope Benedict the 16th. You know, they were brought to light on Vatican's involvement in corruption, money laundering, you know, child pornography, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, Vatican is also very close to the Rockefellers. So the coup against the Vatican is also the coup against the interest of the Rockefellers. And this is but one more example of the struggle, you know, between the two main managers. And I do mean managers. I don't mean owners, you know, of the true world elite circles. New economic model will not allow for so many centers of power, which is why, again, what centers? I'm losing my voice.
Well, don't do that. We've got a little bit longer to go. 15 minutes and you'll be done.
I'll make it through. What centers of power out there? You have the new Babylon, which is the United States. You have the, you know, the Promised Land, which is Israel. The new Caliphate, which is, you know, the ISIS and the terrorists. You have Europe. You have Eurasia or Eurasian Union. You have China, the Middle Kingdom. Okay? And so And then, of course, you have the Vatican. Vatican is out of the picture. Europe, you know, has been weakened beyond belief. The United States, well, you have a struggle there. Israel very well might be dismantled. Oh, that was at least the plan before Trump came into power, because the idea was you dismantle countries, you create regional blocks. For a regional block, economic block to work, you need a minimum number of people so you can, you know, sell your trinkets. And that minimum, economically speaking, is 600 million. So the idea was to create regional blocks, each one with its own currency. United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and part of Mexico would have made up the 600 million. Another block would have been Latin America and South Africa. Another block would have been, you know, German, French, German, Paris, Berlin axis divided by the Strait of La Mancha. Also, you know, added on the former French colonies in Africa. And then England or you know, the British Empire would join forces, you know, with the Arabs. They would have to offer them something in exchange, you know, for them joining their alliance. And, of course, the British have been there, controlled that whole area for the last 100 years. They redrew or drew the borders pretty much for all of these nations. So, you know, that's their back, you know, backyard. So they would offer the head of Israel on a platter, or they would have offered until Trump came into power. Now with Trump in power, what actually is being done is you have Macron in France winning the elections, and Macron is modern-day version of Napoleon III. Okay, so again, a lot of geopolitical games are being played behind the scenes, but what we are seeing is, you know, destruction of the nation-state republics and replacing it with something else, and most, you know, foremost, is the deindustrialization, demand destruction, and, you know, depopulation of society.
Next up, we go to Andy in Los Angeles. Welcome to the program. Hello, Andy. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Great show as usual.
Thank
You're
you,
a great
sir.
Patriot. Daniel, just a few important points in my opinion. Number one, how much of what you're saying is fact and verifiable and also is agreed upon by other researchers? Number two,
my background, you know, I'm not a journalist. My background is military counterintelligence. You know, I've been in military counterintelligence, Russia military counterintelligence since 1993. So I don't know what the researchers are saying, but, you know, the information that we have access to, and again, it's
okay. Didn't the other
high-level government sources, this is the kind of stuff that people at the supranational level have been discussing for several years now. And that's actually one of the things that Putin and Trump talked about in their, you know, January conversation, you know, the idea of how to restructure the world. Because, again, the people who are Trump's enemies in the United States are also the same enemies of Putin in Russia, the liberal crowd. And Trump simply won't work with them. And because the liberal crowd controls all the, you know, principal financial institutions, such as the Federal Reserve, International Monetary Fund, World Bank, European Central Bank, and also Russian economy is controlled by these people. What most people don't understand about Russia is that Putin is not all powerful. He controls Russia's foreign policy because he's the president, but the national policy is controlled by the prime minister. And the prime minister, Medvedev, he's actually run by the liberal circles, the traitors who control, you know, the Clinton crowd. And so what we're seeing in Russia is every position of power in the economic level of government is controlled by the people who are against interests of the nation state of Russia. And why didn't Putin get rid of these people? He couldn't before Trump came into power, because that would have been an open declaration of war against the liberal interests who put him there in the first place. Because again, a lot of these people, such as, you know, Gaidar, Kudrins in Russia, they were put there, you know, by Bill Clinton way back in 1992, and they haven't moved from their position since then. And so to move them out would have been a declaration of war. And needless to say, Washington, what would have they have done? Well, you know, anything from blocking Russia's access to SWIFT chips to deeper sanctions and a full-fledged economic embargo. And the only solution that Putin would have had would have been a nuclear option. That would have been the end of humanity. So that's why you couldn't get rid of these people until Trump came into power. And that's why now we're seeing this, you know, positions, extreme positions on both spectrums. The liberals who are trying to get rid of Trump, with the mainstream media working for them, obviously, and the other side, the isolationists, who are doing their best to make sure that they, you know, neutralize as much as possible in the United States and also in other countries, you know, this push towards, you know, to get the control back, which is why, again, it's not that, you know, it's based on information, a document that you can find, but a lot of this, you know, information comes from government sources, and because, again, I am working on a certain level with these people, I know what's going on pretty much more than what most people, you know, can actually imagine is going on.
And a follow-up, Andy, go ahead.
Yeah, and the final question is the Freemasonic connection. You've mentioned everything, Daniel, but you haven't mentioned the fact that our head of our country, as well as of Russia, and most international powers, are Freemasons, and they are clearly giving each other Freemasonic shakes. And I want to know, is this infighting between an international organization called Freemasonry, where they're fighting for different factions for power, or what is it? What is really going on? Because
it's a very good question. You know, Masonry, you know, has always been against Russia, because Russia is one of the few countries that actually did everything in their power, you know, to get rid of them. We can go back to the period of Catherine the Great. We can go back to the period of, you know, Paul the First, who was murdered, or Alexander the First, you know, who was controlled. You know, this whole, or we can go back to the period of Napoleonic Wars, lodges, you know, were being built across Europe, you know, based, starting with a Grand Oriental Lodge in France. And so the, you know, the Masonic lodges in France and in other European countries did their best to actually get into Russia. And during, you know, the period of Alexander the First, Masonry was basically controlling the government of Russia. But over the past, especially, you know, since the period of the of communism, that's, you know, 1917 to the present, the Soviet Union, the communist Russia, the Bolsheviks, basically took over, you know, the functions of the Masonry, and they controlled the interests of Russian government, which is one of the reasons why the Masons have always hated Russia as a nation state. True, you know, if you go back to the end of the 19th century, every nation in Europe was under the control of the Masonic lodges, and also Russia, the first Russian Revolution in 1905, the February Revolution in 1917. These were all revolutions put together by the Masonic lodges in Russia and in Western Europe. The idea, needless to say, was subjugate the interest of a nation state to the interest of the supranational, very powerful, you know, secretive organization called the Masonry. Today, it still works at a, you know, pretty much the same level. I would go as far as to say that most Russian top-level politicians, you know, they belong to one or another Masonic lodges or these super secretive organizations. But that doesn't change the fact that at least to a certain point, the policies that you see in Russia, you know, foreign policy led by Putin, they work in the interests of Russia as a nation state and against the interests of the supranational elite. It doesn't mean he's not one of them, because, again, economically speaking, Russia is a disaster. Okay, people have no idea how bad the country is economically speaking. How many people, we're looking at about 35-40% of the population, are starving, okay, and as a result of, you know, direct economic policies in the country. But still, that doesn't mean that Putin is a crook or he's an enemy of the nation state, but it probably means that he probably answers to the interests of other masters. That's all.
To your neck of the woods, international caller Dave in Ontario, Canada. Go ahead, David.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Hi, Dave. Good.
I got a question for you guys. Do you think that because of our natural resources up here in Canada that the states get, you know, abundant use of might have anything to do with the fact that there's never been a real terrorist attack in Canada?
I didn't really understand the question very well.
One more time, if you would, Dave.
Okay. The states gets a lot of our natural resources, right? Oil, water, mm-hmm. what have you, down in the States. I was wondering if this has anything to do with the fact that there's never been a terrorist attack on the Canadian soil.
Would you tie in energy consumption, picking it up from the States, with the lack of any terrorism in Canada?
I don't know how to answer that. I think Canada and the United States have been friends for a very long time. But again, you know, Canada is is part of the British Empire, but then so is the United States, because again, if you look at Obama's policy, he's always been subjugated to the interests of the Queen of England. Okay, that's something.
I don't think Canada interferes with the other nations as much as the United States does, and that's probably one reason why.
Earth or any other planet out there in space in the universe interferes as much as the United States. That goes without, you know, without saying, which is not to say that, you know, the British Empire, you know, it's, you know, it's a disgusting, despicable existence, hasn't killed over 100 million people through direct intervention, you know, being, you know, hunger, death, or whatnot. They talk about Stalin being, you know, Hitler being, you know, a mass murderer. I think the number one mass murderer in the world is Winston Churchill.
Really?
Absolutely. Start adding up all the people that he killed, not personally, but through direct intervention of the people behind him.
Yeah.
I think you can add up to 30, 40, 50 million people,
wow.
You know, be it India, be it, you know,
wow.
or any other countries in Asia or in Africa.
Let's go to Sherry in Memphis, Tennessee. Get you in here fast. Sherry, go ahead.
Okay, real fast. You've answered some of my questions. But would you talk about the importance of oil and the potential, the money potential in this country and the Canadian pipeline? And I wanted to know about McConnell and the establishment, you know, but I think you've answered that as to how that plays in.
Let's talk about
high-pitched voice. I couldn't understand anything.
Let's talk about oil, pipelines, and what's going on.
Okay, where in
Canada?
In Canada, well, I don't know. Oil price is not going to go up, but you know, I think again, if you kind of look at the future economic model, which is going to be space based, then you know, it doesn't matter if you have oil or if you don't, because you know, the energy sources which we're going to be using is going to be, you know, based things we find in space, such as helium-3. So again, it's really irrelevant, you know, how much oil we have left on the planet Earth, because we're not going to be using it for very much longer. We're going to go to, you know, higher energy-based energy sources, and a lot of them is, as I said, is helium-3.
Daniel, we are out of time, but very quickly mention your movie again and where folks can see it in New Orleans on May 24th.
Okay, it's taking place at the Britannia Theater. Okay, it starts at 7:30 on May the 24th in New Orleans. It's a 2.5-hour event. We have an hour. The film itself is an hour and 10 minutes long. Then we're going to talk about the Bilderbergers. Then we're going to talk about geopolitics and world, you know, political structures, how these things play into the future of humanity, space exploration, trans-evolution, you know, the coming age of human deconstruction, how it ties into the secret societies, you know, this private, you know, secretive, supranational organizations, the role the United States is going to be playing in, you know, new world order, Donald Trump, who he is, how he got to be where he is, the difficulties and the challenges he's facing, you know, going forward.
Should be a great, great film, to be sure. Up next, Psychic Intuition.